Hello and welcome to a brand new season on Teachers Lift, our inter-institutional podcast for teachers. We're opening the season with our episode called Back on Campus to gauge the mood of teachers and students as we resume face-to-face teaching at Hong Kong University. Joining us today are our esteemed guests, Alvin Wong, Assistant Professor in the Department of Comparative Literature, and Brenda Allegray, a lecturer of gender studies and also a prominent trans rights activist. My co-host Colin Tate and I, Aditi Jhaveri from the Centre for Applied English Studies, are delighted to have you both here with us today. Welcome, Alvi. Welcome, Brenda.
Yes, welcome, Alvi, and welcome, Brenda. So maybe let's start by finding out a little bit more about who you are and what you do at Hong Kong U. So could you just tell our listeners something about your teaching experience at Hong Kong U, roughly, you know, how long you've been here and what sort of the main courses and subject areas you're involved in?
I arrived at HKU in fall of 2018. So I'm going into my fourth year. And as Aditi mentioned, I am teaching in the Department of Comparative Literature, and I also co-teach a course and coordinate a course in Common Core called Hong Kong Culture in the Context of Globalization, CCGL 9002. And then for my department, I teach courses on Hong Kong literature and cinema, and also another course on feminist cultural studies, and one more course on queer theory and culture. So and they also correspond to my research area.
Fantastic.
How about you, Brenda?
Yes, mabuhay, as we usually say in the Philippines. I'm from the Philippines, but I've been living here in Hong Kong for 10 years. So I joined Hong Kong U 10 years ago as a teaching assistant. So I've been a TA for 5 years. And then I got promoted to lecturer after that. And ever since I joined Hong Kong U, I've been attached to this Common Core course called Sexuality and Gender, which is quite popular among the students. So I've been teaching that for about 10 years. Now I started as a TA and then as the program coordinator for that, or course coordinator for that, and main lecturer. And also I created two courses 2 years ago, one of which I'm teaching this semester called Trans Asia, which is focused on transness and otherness in Asia, which is also my main area of interest as a researcher. As a researcher, I focus on transness and otherness in Southeast Asia with focus on the Philippines, and very particularly focus on trans women and trans feminine.
So as you can see, we have very special guests with us today. And yeah, since you both teach Common Core, you are probably encountering students from various different disciplines. So it's probably good to ask you about what is the mood like on campus and how do you feel about returning to face-to-face teaching after 2 years of online teaching?
Well, for me, it's I'm transitioning, you know, it's a term that we usually use in trans studies. So I'm still trying to get used to the hybrid version of the teaching, because 50% of our students are in face-to-face on a certain day, and then the other half of them are online, so they're in Zoom. So trying to balance and trying to set up, doing the setup is kind of challenging, because we want to make sure that everything that we're the videos that we're playing in class are actually seen and heard well also by those who are on Zoom. So that's one challenge. So we have to make sure that our setup is done accurately and correctly before we get going. Each and every time we have to ask our students on Zoom if they can actually hear clearly, or they can see all the videos and the photos or the lecture slides. So we have to ask a couple of students in the face-to-face setup if they can also be on Zoom at the same time, so that they can actually check on, you know, if we're still on track for those who are on Zoom. Because sometimes we don't get to see the students on Zoom's their message, because we're flashing the lecture or a video at the moment. So we don't get to see their messages, if in case they couldn't read, they couldn't hear something. So it's kind of challenging on a technical aspect.
So in the last 2 years, 1.5 years during the pandemic, I kept offering the Common Core course. And this semester, I'm actually only teaching my departmental course on Hong Kong culture, cinema, and also the one on queer theory. So I don't actually know in terms of attendance and student interactions, how's that happening in terms of the Common Core course. But what I do notice is that during the pandemic, we did a survey on how many students would actually attend the 120 students enroll Common Core course, and about 90% say that they would if we switch to face to face. But towards the later part of that semester, actually only a little more than 10 students show up. So that was a difficult part, I think, in terms of just conducting a mixed and dual mode of teaching. With face-to-face teaching, I think the students are fully back on campus and they are very excited. And I do see more than usual sort of enthusiasm for participation. I think students are participating more. And my guess, my wild assumption, is that maybe they were very cut off from sort of interacting with others. So once they're back, they are actually ready to engage with one another. So that's good.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I'd just like to return, if you don't mind, back to your experience during the time when we were online and ask you to think about any, you know, kind of highs and lows that you might have had. Brenda, you sort of mentioned that, you know, there was this kind of challenge of this sort of hybrid. Mm-hmm. Is that currently happening now? Is that, or is it?
Actually, last semester, it was still fully online. So for me, on my end, it was fully online. For the gender studies major, we had about nearly 20 students and we were all online. So that was quite consistent. But for the Common Core, it's also online. The lectures and the tutorials. So it was easier somehow to manage the technical aspect of it because we just have to look at one platform, so to speak, everything on Zoom. So the challenge would be if we are playing a video, we would be asking the students if their internet bandwidth is good enough. So the problem with that is because the students could be somewhere, they could be in their homes, and the bandwidth may not be that good. So we would have to give them the link if that video happens to be available on YouTube. But the challenge is if I have very, very specific videos that it's not on YouTube. So I couldn't actually give them a link of that. So I have to ask them to go somewhere ahead of time. So like a day before, I would send an email to everyone and ask that they be somewhere that there's good internet connectivity so that I can play the video and the video would have good reception on their end. So it's a technical issue.
And for our audience, maybe we can provide a little bit of background because we are saying that we are back to face-to-face teaching and Hong Kong U has declared that we are going on campus completely. And yet here we are talking about hybrid teaching and Zoom teaching with some students in class and some on Zoom. So would you like to explain why this is happening? So for example, for Colin and I, we teach a lot of small classes and so we are completely face-to-face, there's no hybrid at all. So in what situation are we doing hybrid? Would any one of you like to take that question?
I don't know exactly the policy, so I can't quote from it, but I believe it has to do with classroom allocation. So there's always a limit of how much we can allocate classroom to each the need of each instructor. So for courses that has larger or medium size enrollment, they would have to switch between, you have to break the course into two classes and switch between virtual and face-to-face. Is that right?
At the same time.
Yeah.
I see. So it's to do with social distancing. Probably the number of students a room can accommodate has gone down. Mm-hmm. And because the room cannot hold all 120 because of social distancing, some of them have to be on Zoom. And this is switched. So students who are on Zoom for one lesson, they attend face-to-face the next. And this continues throughout the semester, am I right?
In our case, because the room that we were given, LE1, can actually accommodate 300 students at once. I think if I remember it right, 3 years ago, so at least before the pandemic, we had a very huge enrollment, around 300 students, and they all could fit in the auditorium. Because there are only 120, social distancing can still be practiced because they can be one seat apart. But I think it became the directive of the Common Core office that for Common Core, big Common Core classes like ours, 50% of the students will be on face-to-face this week and then the other 50 on Zoom. The following week, they switch.
What about you, Alvi?
One good thing was... in terms of Zoom, I think students' participation were quite active because students that were originally would have been very shy and not participate, they can use the chat room function. And I know some instructors do the breakout session on Zoom. I actually have never managed to learn that. But even without that, I think students were active in the chat room. So a part of my challenge of returning to face-to-face teaching is to maintain that active dynamics in the classroom. And so far, I think I have been able to do so. Sometimes by cutting a little shorter on the my own lecture time and doing more sort of interactive assignment in class, or just asking a more open-ended question and walking around the classroom. So I think students actually enjoy that in terms of exchanging their views on a piece of literature or engaging in a conversation on what they thought about the film.
All right. Seems like they're very engaged.
Yeah. So, I've just thinking from my own experience as well, returning face-to-face, I found that there are certain things I learned from the online teaching or elements of online teaching that I've now sort of incorporated into my face-to-face teaching now. So, for example, I use OneDrive documents a lot for students to share ideas or to post answers or questions during the lesson. They seem to enjoy that. And I still even use Zoom maybe for consultations when students find it difficult to get into campus. We can have a, not for any assessments, but just for if students want a quick consultation about something. So I just wanted to ask if there anything that you learned during, our period of online teaching that you now have sort of incorporated into your teaching sort of bag of techniques,
On the technical side, it's actually whenever I have to share a file, an image, or the PowerPoint, especially if it has an audio component to it, so if it's an audio video material, I would make sure that I have to click on the sound and optimize tick boxes. Yes, because that's something that I usually forget. So before, especially if it's just a if it's a presentation at a conference, someone's going to remind me anyway that, you have to tick on the, or check on the boxes for optimized sound and share, etc. So that's a technical tip, that on the technical side, rather, it's a tip that I have mastered and I have become very conscious about. But then in terms of the psychosocial aspect of learning, I think something that I've started to practice this semester is I should not anymore expect my students to go on cam just to see, because I have this kind of sensitivity with online teaching, especially in terms of teaching our course, that if they are not on cam, then most likely they are not that interested, or they're not as engaged. So there is that tendency to actually assume, on my part, that they may be zoning out in any time. So that was something that I was thinking about last semester. But then this semester, I told myself that I don't think I have to think about that anymore. So if I don't have to force anyone or ask anyone to go on cam. I never ask anyone to go on cam anymore.
And what about you, Alvi? Which aspects of online teaching have you retained for this mode of teaching now.
Echoing with what Colin was mentioning earlier in terms of consultation, I have definitely kept Zoom consultation as an option because, as Brenda mentioned, some courses might still be in some mixed mode or dual mode. And during the pandemic or during the semester when we were doing fully online teaching and mixed mode, I realized that a lot of students who mentioned they would come back to campus but end up not doing so is because a lot of the other courses are also online. So it's actually easier for them to maintain their own schedule if they just go with the online option.
I'm sure. Yeah. Before the semester started, the local media was covering a lot of stuff about teachers and students' concerns and anxieties about returning to the campus, partly because of COVID, partly because they were used to a new mode of teaching and learning and maybe they wouldn't want to come back. Have you experienced anything like that? What did you feel in the class when you were back in the class? What did you feel your students were expecting?
It's hard to gauge, especially we can see their entire faces, you know. So like, I'm trying to read through their eyes or their foreheads, if they're, you know, the movement of their foreheads, if they're excited, if they're happy, or they're still uneasy. But and I'm also waiting for emails if there are any students who are trapped somewhere and their quarantines have, you know, been moved. I only had one, so she's an exchange student from France, and her quarantine, I don't know the exact details as to why her quarantine period was during the month of September, the beginning of the semester. So she wrote me an email asking if I can consider having her in class, even if she is in quarantine for the next 21 days of September. And I accepted her for that. Eventually, after getting out of the quarantine, she felt ill. So she asked if she can be absent. And I just said, well, okay, but I need to talk to you because I have to ask her if she's still interested to stay in the course, if she's already lost a month. And she said she's very much interested. And so, and then I said, hopefully you won't be absent in the coming weeks because we will also have the reading week, you know, and there'll probably be another holiday somewhere, you know. So, and she's very interested. So I guess that's the only slight challenge. But in terms of their interest, I could so far gauge that they managed to adapt to the learning environment. You know, we're in this week for the Common Core class. It's more consistent for the smaller class, for my gender studies class, because they're in the classroom. And since there are just 20 of them, and our classroom is quite big, so they manage to be, you know, to adapt to that kind of learning environment, the face-to-face, you know, they're able to get back. And ours is not the only class they have. So I guess they've fully adapted themselves to the face-to-face. And like today, I noticed that because I kind of extended like 10 minutes because of a film. I have to show them a short film. And it's not so short, actually, I realized. And then after the film, I have to give a little bit of some learning points for them and ask them a question. So the class kind of extended. And I think they were happy to extend. Yeah.
That's very rare.
That's engagement. they were not in a hurry to leave, you know. And especially because this course is kind of specialized. It's about transness in Asia with focus on Southeast Asia, Hong Kong, and South Asia. So I guess they were learning new things because that video is on pre-colonial transness in the Philippines. Mm. Yeah, so all of those which had some rituals, you know, engaging the spirits, the malevolent spirits, and I guess they found that very interesting. So I guess giving them some activities that is that would make them very interested, I guess, would actually help them feel more engaged.
And Alvi, what about you? Do you notice that there is any resistance or reluctance on part of your students to be back on campus, or do you feel that they are all very excited and very happy to be back?
I think that we need to be flexible to to adjust to this new normal, right? That we somehow, I understand the infection rates is fairly low in Hong Kong, but we're still all wearing masks. It's definitely not the same as teaching face-to-face before the pandemic. One very physical adjustment I had to make was I was wearing the normal, you know, mask the first week of, and I wear glasses too, and it just immediately fog up my glasses, and I can't even see my own teaching notes. And so I had to find another more, you know, efficient mask that people use for running and exercising, and now it works. So I think, but despite that, I think students are eager to talk to one another. So far, attendance rate has been quite good in both of my classes. And students have come to my office to ask my views on the readings, or to get practical feedbacks on the writing before the assignment is due. I do make, in terms of addressing students' anxiety, I think what the other anxiety might come from just how their learning has been sort of interrupted by both the pandemic, but just in general, Hong Kong has gone through a lot in the last 2 years.
So we're talking about how students are feeling as they're back on campus. But what about teachers? Because I remember, you know, when the semester was about to start, I was like, oh God, being back on campus. And I had very mixed feelings. I wasn't sure whether I'm going to enjoy it because I had become so used to my own flexible schedule at home. And then I went to my first class, and I was surprised at how much energy I had and how much energy I got from the students. So I surprised myself. I mean, how has your reaction been? Are you enjoying being back on campus, or are there things that you're missing about the kind of work-life balance that we had become used to during these COVID years? Mm-hmm.
I'm actually very happy to be back on campus. When I was at home, I was actually using my prepaid internet connectivity, and it uses up my connectivity for the entire month. So I would rather be on campus, where the internet's really good. And secondly, I'm trained, I guess, to be on campus. So, and the environment actually reminds me that this is where I should be, so to speak, because I like to separate my life at home from the campus. So when I'm at home, I don't want to think about work that much. I do my writing at home as well, but then I don't want to think about classroom stuff so much when I'm already at home. I'd rather think about everything that is class-related or classroom-related while I am on campus. And also, when there are requests for consultation, I'd rather be also on campus. Wow. Because some of the consultation, in my case, some of the consultations are also very personal. Mm-hmm. Because I tend to have students who identify as an LGBTQ. So if that's the case, being on campus, if they're confident to do it face-to-face, and I'm also confident to do it face-to-face, then I'd rather be on campus. I was also in the Philippines for almost a year, where we had a very bad case of COVID. And I had it myself. So, oh, wow. Yes, I had it myself. And then
are you okay now?
Yes, definitely. Because I have active antibodies, so to speak. Mm. So I've seen the worst. So already, you know, I've been in worse situations. So I am less concerned with, and I got used to all the health adjustments, you know, so like my hands are dry because of alcohol constant, you know, it's a constant in my life already, alcohol and washing and mask. I'm used to wearing mask. I just noticed that it's harder for me when I conduct class in an auditorium, because I tend to project my voice. So wearing mask, my throat dries up easily. So I have to have water with me constantly, but I also have to have lozenges in between, throat lozenges, because, and it's different when when we were doing online classes because we didn't have to wear a mask. Right. And we didn't have to project our voices that much. You just have to have good audio in a quiet room, so to speak. So I guess that's one adjustment.
Well, as you said, Hong Kong has been through so much, and students are coming back on campus after all these very big socio-cultural events. Yeah. So we as teachers need to kind of acknowledge that in some form or another. It mm-hmm. shouldn't feel like we are completely, unaware of what they may be going through. Mm-hmm. So to have some form of empathy towards them, I suppose. What about you, Alvi? How are you dealing with this transition?
Even if I have all the materials ready, the syllabi finalized, and even if I have taught the courses before, I do feel a sense of anxiety. But also very similar to your experience, once I'm back on campus, I feel ready and I feel energetic as well. So whereas I think the first semester I was teaching at HKU, I felt that I had to design a lot of materials or learn how to teach in a Common Core course, which is very different from the kinds of smaller courses I taught before. I think with the 3 years of teaching in Hong Kong and also at HKU, the teaching comes more naturally, and I'm not as stressed out in terms of prepping for courses. So that's just personal. But in terms of the anxiety, what Brenda was mentioning in terms of the subject matter and whether you're teaching about, very similar to you, I teach courses relating to gender, sexuality, and we all of us, including Aditi, you and me, we serve on the Committee on Gender Equality and Diversity. So we deal with and we discuss hot button issues all the time. I think there are two ways to look at that. One is that university tends to value or at least want to come across as socially progressive in this, at least in the area of gender and sexuality. And it's becoming a kind of global consensus to have to be open-minded, but also to speak out against, gender inequality and such, and also to just enrich a student's experience in terms of learning more about LGBT and queer issues and representation. So I think as teachers and who teach these subject matters, I think we do fit into the larger institutional context, and it could even provide, we could even be seen as, diversity. I don't know, right? So sort of speaking on behalf of diversity. But the other issue is that it also could create some stress on the part of the teacher who teach in this area, because if you teach on gender and sexuality and feminism and Hong Kong topic, these again have a lot of social implications and resonance. So how do we juggle in terms of that and in the new social environment? I think it's something that I keep thinking about in terms of my curriculum, in terms of maintaining the classroom as a free and rigorous space of discussion. So I don't really have a very specific answer to that, but just to acknowledge that as teachers, we all have to negotiate and work with that.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, negotiate and work within the boundaries that that are there. So that can be quite difficult, especially.
I'd like to add something, because connecting with what Alfie shared, but importantly, when we feel something, so if there's like an internal sense of struggle on the end of the teacher, as to how we're going to navigate the learning spaces, I think that kind of awareness is very important, and it's comforting also. It means that we care, because if we stop caring, we just like we flip off a switch that scares me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to exist as someone that has a switch on and off. I think I want to stay on the whole time. It's just that I can dim the lights and adjust the lights when I have to. So when I feel that, is it time for me to dim the lights or to make it brighter, that still comforts me. It means that I very much care. Mm. And that internal struggle is important because it's something that I have to personally navigate also.
That's a very good analogy. Earlier when we were talking before we started recording this episode, you had a very good question about the issues that we are bringing up, especially related to identity and gender.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, we're sort of touching on this at the moment, but I noticed, obviously, from your bios that both of you are sort of teaching courses on and doing research in areas such as gender and identity and these other issues. I was just kind of curious as to how do you think these kind of issues intersect with this experience of moving from online and back to face-to-face, and, you know, as a kind of researcher in these areas, do you think there is some kind of effect that, you know, our identities changing when they move from these different spheres, from an online sphere to sort of face-to-face sphere? Does it affect sort of people's conceptions of gender and things in any way? I just wondered if you had any sort of thoughts on those.
Yes, I think, I mean, I used the word transition earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's like transitioning from one mode to another. And that metaphor in teaching can be compared to the actual transitioning experience of some trans people, you know, because not all, but some trans people go through transitioning as well. So, and in the classroom, I was able to bring that up. You know, and the students were able to get the message that they transition in modes of learning, but they can also, and also in terms of health related situations where they come from or in Hong Kong. So it's like a transitional experience. But then we also talk about decolonization. So and I guess to relate that with our experience, you know, we may actually try to also decolonize the way we think about disease, the way we think about social relationships, you know. So and I let the students also think about, you know, how else they can decolonize, and then translating that into their new normal. And then intersectionality, because we talk about intersectionality. So one Spain is someone else's as well. So we may have different gender identities or layers to our personhood, but we share several commonalities in terms of, let's say, the pains of what the pandemic brings, and also how we adjust to the pandemic. So that's now an intersection. Mm-hmm. Whereas 2 years ago, we didn't have that, you know. We have several layers of intersecting experiences, mm-hmm. but now we can add another layer mm-hmm. to our experience. So it will bind us after. We're still going through the pandemic, so it still binds us. So when we talk about intersectionality in the classroom, now they can relate. Mm-hmm. So even if they don't see themselves as queer, as trans, or as other, they know that we are closer to the center because this is a central experience.
Yes, yeah. It's part of the collective memory now.
Yes.
Yeah. I think there are both continuity and discontinuity, similarity and difference between the online learning and being back to campus. And I really like Brenda's notion of transitions and also make it both relating to transgender studies or transgender experiences, but also that everybody, especially those who feel marginalized within a given social setting, they in some way, those folks are constantly aware of their social surrounding. So with or without a pandemic, you're constantly adjusting to, for example, if as a LGBT and trans person going into the government office, going through the airport, or going to somebody, your friend's wedding, you know that you're entering a particular social space and you're very aware of that. Mm-hmm. So there is, I wouldn't say natural, but there are some analogies and experience that are very translatable in terms of adjusting between online and face-to-face teaching. And One thing that I try to do and I keep doing, whether online or face-to-face, is to refer to events that are happening. So I know that Brenda might be doing the knowledge exchange project with Mimi Wong and the Transcendence
exhibit.
Exhibit.
It's also hybrid, actually.
Yeah, photo exhibit. And then I went to the photo exhibit, I think it's last year, I think it's November 2020, when it was held in Yau Ma Tei in the Mongkok, Jim Sa Choi area. And so it's good to know that Brenda is also working with Mimi and hopefully bringing it to HKU. And it really, the exhibit is based on the film that Mimi Wong produced with another filmmaker, Macy Chun, and it relates to the class my when I was teaching the queer theory course, and I'm teaching again this semester. So it's good when something we learn in class, such as transgender studies or embodiment or issues of performativity, when these concepts can relate to something happening in Hong Kong. And they can, at least last year, they can visit the exhibit physically. And when I was participating as a participant, right, in the exhibit, I feel that my space is very much well respected in terms of maintaining social distancing, while there were also there were speakers who identify as trans and conducting almost a small workshop. So I think there are definitely ways to maintain a good, active sort of public engagement while we are still in a pandemic. Yeah. And it's important to, it's great that we have Brenda here and also yes. Aditi, and we all serve on this committee. And
Colin serves on several committees as well. Yeah.
I think in general at HKU, I think this emphasis on connecting our teaching and research to knowledge exchange is actually quite, it cuts across all these disciplines and something that I hope to keep alive in my teaching.
Yes, I kind of get what you're saying. And just for our audiences, I'm just thinking that online teaching and offline teaching can be quite different, because when you're on campus, then you have this embodiment in, so your body's there and your body speaks so much about you. So subjects like gender or courses, sociocultural, courses focusing on sociocultural issues, so much is performed through the body. Mm. And when that's not there, online, then how do you assume anything about anybody, And sometimes you say they're not even on camera. Mm. So it probably becomes very challenging to talk about these issues. I mean, you can't see race if they're not on camera. You can't see what they look like. You can't see their gender or their, what they're like, unless you ask them, of course. So in the absence of all these identity markers, do you find that it's harder to teach the kind of abstract courses that you're teaching? And it seems like it is. Is that what we are trying to say here?
The other week, when we were talking about gender performativity, we also talked about performativity in the times of the pandemic. Mm. Because there's a stylized way of presenting yourself, like people wearing colored or decorated masks already. And for some queer people, I guess for some trans people, the mask may also represent some form of a security blanket, because especially for those who are not really comfortable with their embodiment, they get to conceal a portion of that, in the duration of their discomfort. Mm-hmm. And then there is a way for them to perform their gender publicly with the aid of the mask.
Yes.
And because the pandemic is indefinite, and going back to that definition of what performativity is, there is this time element that you get to extend your performance, mm-hmm. and how you perform also changes over time.
Yeah.
So we kind of talk about that in the class, mm-hmm. and it gives the students also a way to relate to that kind of experience without being trans themselves,
right.
Because they know that sometimes they have to recycle a mask, but they don't have to show and tell or talk about it in public that they're wearing recycled masks, whereas they should be disposing masks on a daily basis if it's a disposable mask, right? So there's a way of performing, you know, in that particular aspect. And also, performance can also be affected if you are also sick. Like now it's flu season. And I'm also sentient about that because we want to feel natural about having sore throat or coughing because it's just part of the frailties of the body. But your frailty is also being judged. So sometimes you perform right on a, there should be a conscious and a subconscious aspect to that, and you know, but performativity is not always unconscious. It can also be conscious.
That's,
you know,
true.
So that's something that now students can also relate to when we talk about performativity in the time of the pandemic, trans or not.
I love the way you've explained this kind of identity issue in terms of extension to the online and adapting to the online through masks and different ways of how we behave. Alvi, what are your thoughts on this? And I'm very, very conscious of time running out. So we'll have this and probably another question from Colin and maybe try and wrap up this extremely engaging discussion. Yeah. Alvi.
To put my comments on a really concise manner because of time, I do everything that Brenda was saying earlier to relate to these abstract concepts to students' own experience, whether they identify as LGBT, trans or not. And also when explaining concepts such as how gender is socially constructed, what does it mean when you are performing your gender, whether consciously or intentionally or unintentionally, I ask them open-ended question and also ask them to reflect on their social upbringing. At what points do you feel that you have this pressure to conform to a particular gender? And what are the social institutions that reproduce gender norms? And they, it's great to hear from them concrete examples of how they understand these concepts and resonate with them on a more practical level. And I did the same thing with my Hong Kong literature class this week. We were teaching a short story by Sai Sai called Marvels of a Floating Cities, and it sort of allegorized Hong Kong as this floating city that is neither ascending or neither sinking, right? Everybody is sort of stuck in the middle.
In limbo,
right? So it sort of relates to the idea of floating also might relate to migration. So that's really close to their hearts, or they know many people who might have migrated or thinking about immigration. So I think the reading now, when we talk, even if you just talk about reading with such symbolic meaning, it automatically connects to what's happening or to their own lives in new ways. So I like to do these kind of discussion in class.
I wish I was in your class. So we'll probably fast forward to the last question.
Yeah, I think just very, very briefly, you know, if you could give maybe one or two pieces of advice or suggestions or anything that you think would be useful to other teachers and educators about, you know, what to do or how to cope with this transition back to face-to-face teaching.
Well, I think we're a community also, so we can always learn from each other. You know, so we can never monopolize, you know, our techniques, and we will make mistakes. And when we make mistakes, it's okay, and we can always do something differently next time. But then we can always ask within the community of educators. Here or outside of Hong Kong, we will always learn something new.
I think I have learned this, whether it's the benefits or regime of flexibility during the pandemic. I think as teachers, we all have really ambitious goals in terms of implementing learning outcomes and creating demanding assignments. And you know, having gone through the pandemic and now back to face-to-face, I do realize that students are transitioning, as you said, back to this new environment, and that they might not have time for equally for all the courses. So I have trimmed down on some of my creative assignment and just make it the usual paper assignment. I have make sure that my assignments remain rigorous while also feasible, so that they can at least complete the course on time and successfully. And I think being flexible and being, sort of attuned to the needs of a student in this new environment is at least it works for me.
Wonderful. I mean, you know, I came into this discussion today, this podcast today, thinking we are just going to be talking about, well, how our students are doing and probably touch on things like excitement level, resistance, reluctance. But this went so much beyond that. The beauty is that here we talked about, you know, intersection issues, you know, how the pandemic intersects with our own identity on campus, with online and offline identities as well. And I hope our audience will like this kind of in-depth look at the way things, you know, the pandemic can change things to this extent in teaching and learning, right? And especially for courses, for every course, there's a different impact. So thank you very much, Alvi. Thank you very much, Brenda, for such an invigorating, stimulating intellectual discussion. We really enjoyed it. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. And happy International Teachers Day.
Oh, yes. Happy Teachers Day.
Thank you, Aditi. So that's the end of this episode, and we look forward to the next episode in the future.
Stay tuned to our next episode. We'll be coming with great content. We can promise you, you'll have very exciting content in the episodes to appear. Thank you, and bye-bye.